It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm he's pounded.
Welcome to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106.
All hell.
You can
as
also,
proud as all here.
Yep. You can also text us at that same number, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Piping Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fantabulous Seafood Shed.
Yeah, I got to get my groove to see now. I'm just a little off, I guess. I don't know.
What's the matter with you? You're not wound up tight enough tonight or something.
Not.
Maybe didn't get the spring tight enough.
That's right.
Yeah, you know what they say? You have these dancing dolls. They call it, what they call it in pure country, dancing chickens.
I think it's probably dealing with his heat.
I can imagine. You've been fighting it, that open concrete floor in that big old shop.
I tell you what, it's sitting, go inside the office for a minute and then take care of something and walk out, and it's just, you can't breathe.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just
awful. I don't see how you stay and not get sick from the air-conditioned office to the floor to the air-conditioned office to the floor.
Well, I don't get to go in the air-conditioned very often, so that's
that's what it is. When you go to the air-conditioned office, you thaw out, or you start icing back up.
I have to limit the time in there, no doubt. But I tell you, it's been a hot one, and hope everybody is paying attention to their cars and making sure that.
I got a question.
Wind trouble.
Where do they put the thermometer when you look at your dashboard and you read the temperature?
In about 75 different places.
Well,
depending on what kind of car you got.
Well, yeah. The reason I'm saying that, obviously, it's not in the engine compartment.
It's awful close to it on most of them. It's actually in the grill in most cars.
Yeah.
Some cars, it's in the mirror, one of the outside mirrors. So it can be in a lot of different places, but it's awful close to the radiator. And
is it affected by the airflow going around the radiator?
Well, it is, but it's that's why we have concerns sometimes about. Well, my thermometer, my temperature doesn't update quick enough. It doesn't change. Well, what you don't understand is you've got to be going above 20 mile an hour for 5 minutes straight before it will start updating after you crank your car up, because it wants that air movement across it.
Are you talking about the radiator?
No, I'm talking about the
thermometer.
I'm talking about the outside temp sensor.
Temp sensor. Yeah. All right.
Oh, we can't call it thermometer no more?
No.
Thermometer, man. That's like Americus.
Well, yeah. Now
American.
Also, the reason I'm asking, if you're out in a black asphalt parking lot versus running down an interstate highway, you're going to get different temperature readings.
Sure. Well,
so,
of course.
It's not changing real quickly. What is it doing, kind of an average?
No, it doesn't change drastically. If it sees a temperature change, it'll drop a couple degrees at a time, or a degree or so at a time. It's not unusual to walk out and get my truck in the parking lot, which is a large asphalt parking lot, which
right.
is generating a bunch of heat, and it be 102, 3, 4, 5 degrees on the ambient sensor on the truck. And it's, 5-6 miles down the road before it starts updating and coming down to the actual outside temperature. That was the temperature around that truck at that time.
Right.
The other day we passed two different banks with thermometers. Both of them had different readings from our car reading.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin to say, well, what is the actual temperature?
Charlie, let me ask you a question.
It's hot.
How important is
at your age, what in the hell are you doing worrying about crap like that?
As long as the AC is running, I don't worry about
it. That's what I'm talking about. Reach up and turn that sucker up high and put it on recirculate.
Yeah.
Put it, let it blow through your hair.
Now, what kind of sensor is this now? What did you call it while
it's
ago?
It's an ambient air temp sensor.
Ambient air temp sensor.
Which is the air around
A-I-T-S.
You
yep.
the damn teacher. You
well,
ought to know
I was
about all that
a
stuff.
Thermometer.
A thermometer.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we got that settled. Thanks,
yeah,
Kev.
I'm going to worry about our ambient things.
See, I sit here with these burning questions and wait for you guys
to write
show
notes.
Up so I can ask.
Hang out for
notes.
A week and then call in.
Write That's notes, it. Charlie. Write Work notes.
But anyway, back to cars. You know, with the temperature up like it is, you know, you need to be watching your temperature gauge in your car. You need to be, you know, checking the coolant level. You need to be looking at your tires closely. You know, there's a lot of things that you just need to pay attention to a little more because, I mean, these cars are struggling to keep cool in this kind of weather. You know, when it's already 100 degrees outside, you know, it doesn't take much for that car to get in a bind and get hot. You know, so you just got to keep an eye on it. And these things, they tend to run way hotter now than what they used to for fuel economy and efficiency. But unfortunately, that doesn't leave a lot of temperature gain before they start doing damage.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me throw another one out there.
Okay.
What do you think the difference between a solid black car is and then a white car on the interior temperature?
I'd guess about 10 degrees.
Okay. But the black car or the dark colored car is going to be hotter than the lighter reflective light.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Well,
the perfect thing would be a mirror car, but then you'd be running people off the road because they'd be blinded by the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But, Charlie, turn your mirror straight up.
No, I mean if the whole body was a mirror.
Yeah. I tell you.
I ain't going to give you a break tonight, Charlie.
That's all right.
Yep.
It all makes a huge difference, the color, the, you know, the materials, the, you know.
You crack that window when you first get in.
Having a ceramic tint on the windows.
Oh, yes. I love mine. Man, that's the best thing I've ever done.
It doesn't have to be dark, but it has to block some of the UV rays. And that helps keep the temperature inside the car down.
Well, they've got what they call a legal, as dark as you can get, but legal ceramic tint.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I had put on my car. Now, it's funny. I can inside of the car, I can see outside well.
Right.
But when if in the daylight, if you got any kind of little sunshine or glare, then you can't see inside of that car.
Right.
You know?
Right. But yeah, it works that way. The only downside to tint is if it's really dark outside and you're in that car and there's a little bit of light inside that car, then that's the side that doesn't want to see through real well.
Okay.
You know, I have had I've actually had to roll my windows down to make turns in that, you know, because I just didn't feel comfortable with the with what I was seeing. Because I'd look over and it'd just be pitch black. I couldn't pick anything out.
Oh, okay.
You know, okay. Now, you know, if there was lights on,
you could see it. You could see well then. Yeah.
If there's, you know, lights coming or whatever. Yeah,
so
no
it's at to a disadvantage of the for the driver with that from the inside under certain conditions at night and in light and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
what about
makes
difference?
It a little more difficult.
What about the difference in a dark interior and a light interior? How do you find that to work?
You know, in my personal opinion, it you know, a lighter interior is definitely cooler. I've had cars both ways, and you know, the cars with a dark interior, it does tend to be a little warmer inside.
Right. I think so too.
You know, I've got my classic car, it's got a white interior, and it helps with the temperature inside the car.
Yeah. Well, you know, my Lincoln has a black colored interior, and my Buick has a dark colored leather interior or whatever that is. They said leather.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of difference in the temperature on those vehicles when you get inside of them, and certainly when you sit down.
Yeah. It's it definitely makes a difference. And you know, now I've had cars over the years. I've had convertible with a white interior, and if the sun's beating down on it, it's hot. It don't matter.
It's hot, yeah.
It don't matter anyway. You know, you do learn fairly quickly to fold the seats forward, you know, before you get out of it. And because you will stick to it when you get in it.
You burn your hiney when you get in there, boy. Yeah, burn your hiney.
The my old 70-mile Chevelle, one thing you learned real quick, it had that little chrome strip running right down the center of the center console.
Ooh, you had a Chevelle.
You did? Hell yeah. You did not lay your arm on it.
No, you didn't touch that. No, no. Not with a top down.
Not with a top down. But anyway, we're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
A little place called Hamburger Dan. I heard that old jukebox playing a song about a truck driving man. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I'll put a quarter in the jukebox and play the truck driving man.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, you heard the story of the hot rod race that
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Ramick along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Apparently we have a caller. Caller, are you with us?
Yeah, I am. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing great. How are you?
Well, Kevin, I got your homework tonight cut out for you, man. Twin bought me a 2010 Camaro.
Okay.
And I have a check engine light that's about to drive me slap crazy. And what it's doing is pulling up a P0017. And what I've done so far is I've changed the valve actuator. And I've also replaced the cam sensor.
Right.
And it's still pulling up that code. But what's really interesting, this car runs like a brand new.
Yeah, yeah. V6 motor?
Yep.
Yeah. More than likely, the time and chains are going to be worn, which is causing the cam timing to be off a little bit. How many miles does it have on it?
97. Right, at 98.
Yeah. They were having some issues.
Like I say, it runs like a top, and that's what I didn't want to hear from it because that's what I was afraid it was going to be.
Yeah.
But I didn't know because it ran so good that it could be that.
Yeah, and usually if you crank it cold, you know, and you hear the chains for, a second or a few seconds, that's a good indication that there's too much slack in them. It doesn't take a whole lot of slack on those to make it an issue. They were having some issues with those early on, wearing a little too fast. And most of the time it was because of, oil change intervals. If you change oil, you didn't really have that problem. But if you carry it out to, 7,500 or more on your oil change intervals, which those would at that time, it was causing issues, no doubt.
Well, let me ask you this. How much longer do you think I have before, should I address this immediately, or have I got some time? Because I just can't believe how good it drives.
Right. Well, the main thing is,
check engine light.
Yeah, the main thing is, as long as it's not, jumping around and making metal during when it's running, which when I'm saying that is because the timing chain is rubbing against something aluminum or whatever, you'll hear it, rattling and idling at idle and even, at higher RPMs later on down the road. At that point, you got to do it,
Gotcha.
But you don't want to wait too long because you'll end up with metal in the passages that you just can't get out. So
let me ask you this. I'm going to do an oil change tomorrow. Is that a good indication to grab that oil and check it for metal?
It does not hurt to do that. Get you a paint strainer and drain it through that and see what you capture. Yeah.
And that's going to be a telltale what's going on with it.
Exactly.
Well, one quick question. Has these cars gotten so sensitive that the wrong oil can cause these lights?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a variable cam variable cam timing motor. So and it's oil pressure activated with oil control solenoids and actuators. So yeah, absolutely. You know, if it's expecting it to do one thing because of the oil viscosity, and you change and put a different thickness oil in it, higher or lower, which you really can't go lower because it's pretty thin stuff anyway.
Correct.
You know, you're going to change the characteristics of how it works. You know, I have recommended people go to a heavier weight oil. You know, older in the life of the vehicle, it tends to take up a little bit of the wear and clearance, but you know, it can cause some issues with the cam actuators.
Got you. Because that's really what it is. It's like more like guides inside that thing that chains riding on it's rubbing against, right?
Right, right.
I got you.
Which okay. It's got it's a metal guide. Correct. With a plastic face on it, and tensioners and all that. But, you know, that stuff wears, you know, and any kind of metal starts generating, then it wears more, and it's a downhill slope at that point.
Right. All right. Is that something that you need to pull the engine to do? Because I noticed there's a lot of room in this front of this car, the way the motor's sitting further back. Is that something that I could leave the motor in, or is that something you'd like to pull the motor out to do?
In the Camaro, it can be done in the car fairly, you know, easy. That's probably the best way to do it. That same motor is in like our Impalas and Traverse and that. In those cars, you drop it out, you know. But the Camaro, it's got enough room around the front of it that you can do it in the car without a real, you know, real problem.
I got you.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks, guys. Y'all have a good night.
Appreciate you calling in.
You were bringing up something there that is a a lot of questions about as to whether or not you're saying a variable
cam timing,
you know.
Right.
All right. Well, now, does that mean that you actually have a cam in there, or you don't have a cam? When does the variable lifters come into effect, and does it have cams?
Well, on that still particular cams, motor,
where are we at with that?
Oh yeah, it right now everything we have still has a camshaft.
Okay.
Or camshafts.
Okay.
So where we're at is that particular motor has four camshafts. It's two cams per head, and then exhaust cam and an intake cam. And it has oil pressure controlled actuators, which is basically an adjustable gear on the front of each camshaft.
Is it moving the cam, or is it moving moving the lifters or not?
No, it's actually moving the cam.
So it's advancing retarding the cam with oil pressure?
Retarding the cam, yes. It is actually changing where the gear's bolted to the camshaft.
Right.
That part moves.
Okay, so that's advancing or retarding.
Right.
And does it do it with oil pressure, or is it doing it with timing?
It does it with oil pressure. And oil pressure is what moves the cam timing.
Okay.
Okay. And that is controlled with a solenoid. You know, basically it's an oil pressure.
So it would have to be always advancing it, and then when the pressure drops back, it would just come back to normal.
They will actually lock themselves. They go to like a home point when the oil pressure goes away to them, and it locks back in, and it's supposed to lock back in. Sometimes they don't, and that causes issues. But, you know, some of our stuff retards, some advances. They're using it for other things other than making horsepower. They're doing it for emissions and to be able to get rid of EGR valves and all kind of different stuff. And, you know, it's way deeper than what we need to get into here. But
I know, right.
You know, they're, yeah, they're
– Well, you know, and I'm familiar with some of that, but I felt like it would be advantageous to talk about it so that some of the other people would be more knowledgeable about what's really happening.
Right. And, you know, there's a whole lot going on with her camshafts. And you know, that motor was it was a variable cam timing motor. Later on, they have – added in variable displacement, which means it drops two cylinders when it gets to a certain load and RPM, that kind of thing. It's doing that with the lifters. You know, it'll actually unlock the lifters.
Then the lifters collapse.
Well,
not totally collapse, but they back off.
Well, and I said that wrong. They're actually doing it with the rockers on that particular motor. On our V8 stuff, they're doing it with the lifters.
Okay.
And it's a two-part body on the lifter. They have an inner part and outer part. The outer part constantly moves up and down.
Right.
Well, then it unkeys the inner part, and it just sits still. So it quits moving the valve.
Darn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now on our rocker arms,
and
on
they're
V6.
Doing that. They're doing that now electronically with solenoids, or are they doing it with oil pressure?
Well, both.
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 Okay.
Because they're using solenoids to control the oil pressure, and the oil pressure controls the lock systems to advance camshafts or advanced retard cams or to unlock lifters or rockers. Which, like I say, our V6 stuff, they're doing it with the rocker arms. And even our four-cylinder stuff now, they're doing variable lift, and they're doing that with rocker arms as well. You know, they're basically changing the ratio of the rocker arm, make it have more lift at times by changing where the pivot point is for the rocker.
So back like an old, for the people that's familiar with it, the regular old small block Chevrolet had a 1.5 ratio rocker arm.
Right.
And then you could pick up 50 thousandths if you are for like 40 something thousandths, actually, if you put a 1.6 rocker arm on it.
Right.
So it's doing that with oil pressure and solenoids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And it's doing the same thing. You're increasing, or you have a stable point of lift,
right,
but then you can increase that lift.
Right.
But now, right, do they rotate the cam so that you have either advancing and retarding it when they get the additional lift?
They're kind of doing it all at one time.
Computer can do all
everything,
that stuff.
Everything
that we experimented with over the years.
Right, right. Well, and that's the thing, and that's how they're able to get the performance and the mileage and the
emissions,
smooth idles and that kind of stuff,
right,
and emissions,
okay,
out of these things that you never could back in the day because it was. You know, they have way more control over everything. But Charlie's over here waving at me and telling me.
I know.
Me
he's saying it's time to go, big guy.
So we're going to have to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages.
He's pounding down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm East Pounder, like a bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some devil mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go, and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old bandit run.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Yeah, we're talking about a little bit of everything and some of the new GM stuff.
It was building motors and engineering and re-engineering and un-engineering. So, how about a 2007 Chevy Suburban that the ABS light and the stabilizing lights are on, but it has no codes in it?
Yeah. And, you know, this was actually a wheel speed sensor problem in the rear. And
it had all those lights working on it?
Yeah, and some of these will actually... they'll send messages up, but they don't necessarily store codes. Some of these systems, everybody thinks that you can go to the little box store and they can read the code and tell you exactly what's wrong with it.
That's not true.
And that's just not the way it is. You know, it's, there's so much more involved when it comes into, trying to track down this stuff. And, you got to know where you're going. You know, the code is great because it gives you at least a direction to go.
Right.
But, you still got to get the book out. You still got to know what you're looking for. You still need the knowledge to trace this stuff down, you know.
Well, then you're talking about the left rear wheel speed sensor now.
Mm-hmm.
This, for the benefit of our listeners, this is not inside of the tire or inside of the wheel.
Right.
It's something. Is that something that's on the outside? It's reading the revolutions of the rim or the tire or what?
Well, on this one, it's actually in the axle tube. There's a little hole that goes in, and there's a reluctor on the axle itself.
On the axle. So you're not. You're not reading it off of the wheel or the tire.
Not directly off the tire or the wheel. It's off of the axle before it ever gets all the way out to the tire. And there's one on each side. But it it can definitely be an issue. And one of the things we see is the reluctor, the way these rear ends are put together, sometimes that reluctor will move a little bit, and it won't be centered up in the hole for the sensor to read on. And it'll make it kind of come and go. And turn some of these lights on and do some weird things.
Well, do you have, do you guys at the shops have a schematic or something, or you have some kind of installation locator that would recenter these units?
Really, it's not that technical. Basically, you pull the sensor out and you look in there and you can see it. And if it's not centered in the hole, you have to get in there and recenter that sensor up.
Well, you can do
or the reluctor
up by eyeballing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's close enough on that. It doesn't. It's not changing the distance from the sensor, which is something that's very critical. And the reluctor is probably a half inch wide or more. So as long as it's close to center on it.
So then the actual is about an inch and a half or an inch and a inch and a quarter or an inch and three quarters around.
Yeah, it's probably about an inch. Yeah, it's probably about an inch and three quarter thick. The reluctor's around it. So it's probably a 2.5 inch reluctor wheel.
Well, now, aren't some of these wheel sensors, don't they read off of the tire rim or wheel or something there?
Well, some of them read right off of a sensor on, say, a front hub bearing in a car and truck,
right,
front wheel drive.
Okay.
There's a reluctor that's basically on the backside of the rotor that it picks up on. Some of them actually have a reluctor that's on the outside of the rear end on the axle, and it picks it up off of it. So it really just depends on which setup you have. Some of the older stuff actually used the output speed sensor for the transmission and didn't read anything off the rear end. Is what they called a three sensor system, which is a three wall, four wall, which is basically just the term for four sensor or three sensor system. So basically, it didn't know if which tire was slipping or was sliding. It just knew one of the two rear was at least, but it could differentiate the front. So.
All right, big question.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell's that got to do with a car? I mean, why would we have that?
Well, it's all about the stability of the vehicle and the ability to bring the car to a halt and still control the direction you're going.
You're talking about with horsepower or brakes?
With brakes.
Okay, so that's why we're seeing the ABS light.
Yeah.
And the stabilizer light.
Yeah,
on.
The stability light. Yeah, it's...
The stabilizer, yes.
Yeah, and the stability light will also come on under acceleration circumstances. If you're getting a little too aggressive and getting...
The tire starts spinning,
doing some things, it can kick in a traction control and limit wheel speed, wheel slippage. So it has multiple... abilities or capabilities.
We used to
there.
Do that with our foot.
Well, yeah. And,
mind over foot.
I have raced against cars that had traction control that, is very good and for a long race. People don't have to worry about controlling
that. That's illegal.
Well, it's
racing,
definitely illegal.
Racing
it's definitely
it
illegal.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. But I have raced against it. I've heard it.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're next to someone and
you can hear it.
And well, you can hear them stab the throttle and it starts missing and cutting up and doing weird stuff until it gets straightened up and then it smooths out and runs just as pretty as please down the straightaway. And what that's doing is it's cutting horsepower, pulling. It may drop cylinders. It may pull timing. It may do a lot of weird things to limit wheel speed.
That sounds like that's cheating.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But on a race car.
On a race car.
But now, we were still seeing the same thing in a lot of our street vehicles. I mean, our everyday drivers. Is that where they got that from?
Well, and that's where that technology really originated from was racers, hot rodders trying to gain an advantage.
We're known for that.
Yeah. I mean, I've always said that if you want to solve a problem with a car or anything, you hand it to a racer and you tell him he can't do it.
Right. You can't do this, but I'm going to come back in 2 weeks and see.
Right, and see where you're at with it. You know, they'll figure out a way to make it work and get around it where you can't find it. You know, so it does happen. So,
okay.
You know, but it's it's a very neat system, and it does a lot of neat stuff. You know, say if you're, for some reason, you have to get on the brakes hard in a corner, it knows the angle of the car versus where it should be going, and it applies brakes or power to certain corners of the vehicle, basically. To be able to control that and bring it back under control.
You're saying that the car computers are smarter than the individuals driving them, in some senses.
Oh, they're a lot smarter than the ones that I drive around out here on the airport every night. But it's they can do some really neat things, and you know, we call them babysitters. Basically, it's taking care of the things the driver really should be doing. One of the things I'm worried about is we're no longer training people to drive cars properly. You know, we're putting it all in the hand of the car. You know, so
you know, that's what I was thinking while you were talking there, is we're taking away the things that we should be worried about as drivers in the days prior to all this sophisticated technology. That we'd be thinking about this stuff. Well, you don't want to accelerate too hard in this turn because you could break one of the tires loose and the car might lose traction.
Right.
But now they go, oh, no, that computer will overcome this. You just lay on in there, you know?
Well, what happens if it doesn't? Yeah, you got to control that thing.
911. Get me a record.
Yeah, we were talking about
if I'm able to get out.
Yeah, we were talking about something similar the other night. You know, and we're talking about racing, and we were talking about the younger generation of racers coming up, and you know how we race now versus how we used to and how we used to drive. And we've gone through probably 10 or more years of. An RPM limiter, you know, in our cars to where they only let you turn so many RPMs.
Right.
Well, they have taken that, and it has taken the ability of a driver to know when to hit his mark to get in a corner on the local level, because if you took that rev limiter away from them, and it's not hitting it, you know, I don't know if you hit it, you hear it hit 3, 4, 5 times, then you lift. If you take that away from them, they drive way too deep in the corner and can't get it through the corner.
No, they drive it with that rev limiter.
They're doing it with the rev limiter.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, well, I don't know how y'all did it without it. And it was like, well, we drove down in there until scared. You lifted.
That opens up a big can of worms because we're talking about these cars and all the technology that's in them. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure that there's other people out there that would like to call in and ask them questions. So we would entertain a few calls if that wants to
we
work.
We do have a caller.
Okay.
But, let's see what the caller has to say. What
I'll
we do for you?
My questions for later. Go ahead.
Yep. Caller, you with us?
Hey, Kev, how you doing? It's Kevin.
Oh, good.
Hey, Mr. Flaxton.
Hey, buddy.
I'm catching this. I just got off work catching up here. We're talking about all the automation and everything, computers. Biggest thing is, you know, if you could keep these doggone telephones out of these kids and quasi-adult hand right there, all the safety you show them right there still doesn't fix stupid. That's a fact.
Exactly.
We're going to have to develop a program that when the ignition switch turns on, the telephone turns off.
When they put it in the steering wheel, they said, oh, this is going to be great. You can answer the steering wheel. Right. But, you know, how many times do you get on a road? I saw a little girl the other day, probably 18, 20 years old,
driving with her knees.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Driving with her knees, texting with both hands.
Oh, my God.
Says, you know, that's just an accident waiting to happen.
Oh, yes. Sure.
You know? People say, you know, and all the computer stuff is nice there where it decelerates at the whole 9 yards. But it just comes back to operator error. You know, years ago, like you talked about, you had a 10 and 2. And even when you're talking about racing and stuff, you had to have a skilled driver out there. Now they want the computer to fix everything.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
They're taking away the driving ability of the drivers, and that's where I was going to go with my question. We're talking about the darn computers and all these self-driving cars. I mean, everybody wants to sue the driver now, but you got a self-driving car and the guy's reading a book, the car's driving itself, and it has a wreck. Who the hell are you going to sue?
It's going to be the manufacturer because it's going to be his fault.
Driver, you know, what people don't understand is, you know, when you experience that car, you get behind the wheel right there, you become one with that car. And that was the fun thing, like when we were kids here, and we'd get our car and go out there, you know, bring it over to your shop and start working on it.
Right.
You get some sweat equity in it, but now they want everything done for them.
Yep.
That's crazy. So, but anyhow, hey, hope you guys are doing well. I always enjoy the show.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
Good hearing from you, Kevin. But, yep, it sounds like it's time for a break, so we're going to take a break, and we'll be back after these messages.
Roll on highway, roll on along, roll on daddy till you get back home. Roll on family, roll on crew, roll on mama like I ask you to do.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But I do believe we have Terry online. Terry, you with us?
Yeah, Kevin, I just wanted to call mainly to tell y'all how much I enjoy the show each week and love listening to all this new technology and understanding it because I'm an old school guy that used to set points with a driver's license, you know.
That kind of guy. Gauge matchbox time.
Yep.
I've never had a race car. My uncle did. He had an old Cutlass 442 that we ran at Centronelle on a dirt track.
Yep.
And I was a pit crew. And I always followed, and I went with J.C. Mason and Okie Mason. Actually worked for their daddy.
You talking about old school now.
Yeah.
I know those guys.
And now I've been lately following Monty Skinner building cars. And my wife bought me about 10 years ago a 10-lap drive at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You can buy a drive on the speedway?
Yeah.
You got in and you drove the car on the speedway. And these are old hand-me-down racing cars from like the Busch Series and the NASCAR. And
not your personal car.
No.
Oh, no. This is a sure enough race car.
But you had a guy sitting in the passenger seat with a little dial in his hand and a remote control, and he controlled your rev limiter. He would allow you to go as fast as he felt comfortable with.
Yeah.
And he said I hit the wide open 164 mark is all they were geared for. I mean, I know they've run 200 mile an hour on that track.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to tell you is after 10 laps, I felt physically exhausted. And when we got back in the car and started to leave the track, I would advise you sit for a half an hour or more because your depth perception, I couldn't stop at a red light.
Right.
It was like when you go from 164 miles an hour to 55 miles an hour, your body, it takes a little bit of time for you to be able to deal with it.
You know, you get some of that when you come off an interstate and get on a city street.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
it's hard to slow down.
164 to 55. It's just I couldn't believe it. It was blowing my mind. After about 5 miles, it got a little better. But
well, now you're gonna laugh at this one, Terry. I have seen the time that Kevin's always talking about him how well he drives, and he drove this and he drove that. And I was at the track one night when we had to get about five guys to help get him out of the car because he was exhausted.
Totally. I tell you, that's, you can get wore out in them. I promise you.
Yeah,
you can get wore out, no doubt.
I couldn't believe only 10 laps, and it just I was like fixed to the track, and the fence was going by, and you could see signs and things, and it was just all a blur. You know?
Yeah, that peripheral vision will give you headaches, won't it?
Yep.
Yeah, it was something. I gave it all I could because I knew I'd probably never do it again. But it was something I would advise everybody to do once in your lifetime.
How long ago did you do that racetrack?
It's been about 10 years ago now.
You can still do it.
They have it down
at Mobile every now and then, don't you?
Yeah. I had an opportunity to do it years ago.
It cost me $400. It was like $40 a lap, but it was well worth it.
It was worth it, absolutely.
As a matter of fact, I had to make two trips because the first time we went up, it got rained out, and we had to turn around and go about 6 months later.
Yeah.
See, that's one of those things you need to do with a camera on your brim of your hat.
That's right.
One of the GoPros.
They did have a camera in the car, and it was – on VHS, and I've got the tape of it, and I just need to get it converted over to disc.
Yeah, well, they need to also hook a heart monitor and a oxygen monitor to you.
Blood pressure when you
get in there, because one of the first things you got to remember to do is breathe.
Right.
When you get in a car, you know the speedways aren't as bad, but like short tracks. You can catch yourself holding your breath for a lap or two. Yeah. You got to
be sideways.
Oh, yeah.
Going in the corners with rev limiters. I've never done that, but I've always got up all the speed I could on the straightaway. And if I go into the turn, I just back off, let the weight shift. And then as I go into the turn, start gradually accelerating again so that I can get that rear grip to carry it through.
Yeah,
you've been around race cars a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I grew up in the country on none of the dirt roads, and when they were wet,
we had our own race tracks, didn't we?
Negotiate.
There you go, buddy. Yeah. You know, I never had any problem.
I wanted to call and tell y'all how much I appreciate you.
Thank you, buddy.
Right, I appreciate you calling in.
All right.
He just gave me a new idea. Next time we go to Atlanta, we're going to put on our list that we're going to buy Marguerite a racetrack.
There you go. Right. Get your bride out there.
Get it out of her system.
Yep.
And if she's listening, I'm not implying anything.
Yes, you are, Charlie. Yes, you are. But, you know, I want to bring something else up about it. What he brought up as an individual, well, what we're having is, and we see that, and we don't understand why it's happening, is why do the race car drivers go to a track and they let them practice and they let them make all these laps and they let them practice for an hour or so? Well, yeah, they're tuning the car. But they're also tuning their body, their eyes, their depth perception to the speed and the G forces and all of the things that they have to do on that particular track.
Yep. You know who is probably the most dangerous guy on a racetrack as far as, you know, going to kick your butt?
Tom.
If you have someone that is in a very fast car, a class or two above, and he drops down and gets into a slower car the same night.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has slowed down
so much for him
that it's nothing.
Right.
There's nothing to it. I've done it and gotten out of a super late model and climbed in a super stock, and it's like you have all the time in the world to do stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're like, what? Am I parked or what?
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's amazing the difference, you know. But, I mean, years ago I was helping a guy, and he was having some issues with his car, and he asked me to climb in and make a lap and kind of, you know, walk him through what was going on and where I was picking up throttle and all this. So I was just making a lap around the racetrack, and I had my thumb on the push to talk button and I was talking to him the whole time, and I was just kind of talking him through my whole lap. And I come up off the corner and got a little too aggressive and got the car turned sideways. And, sure enough, sideways, and just kind of smoked the tires halfway down the front straightaway. Brought it back in and said, well, that was a little too early. So, I backed out of it and went on back through and come back in. He's like, how'd you do that? I said, what do you mean? He said, how did you get the car that far out of shape? And you're talking to me like we're standing here talking to each other. it's like,
And all the time in the world.
Yeah. If that was me, I'd have sounded like a 12-year-old girl on the other end of that microphone. I'd have been panicking. So you just got to let it go.
In all fairness, nothing against 12-year-old girls.
Oh, no. Hey, we got some 12-year-old girls that's driving the hell out of race cars right now. Yeah.
I wouldn't surprise me.
But if you're a grown man, you ain't supposed to sound like one.
You're not supposed to sound one scared to death. Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, it's that high-pitched, fast-talking voice there.
There you go. A little
interest
sometimes. So are you saying that the communication between the driver and his pit crew sometimes raises up a little bit?
Sometimes it's a little challenging to understand.
A lot of times you don't need to be listening to it.
You come back on the radio and say, okay, now slow down. Tell me again.
Breathe a little bit. Take a deep breath.
But, it's a lot of fun. People don't really understand that it takes someone in pretty decent physical shape to do that kind of stuff. It's a lot of hard work. But
you know what's really fun?
Yeah.
Being on this show with you guys every Monday night.
Man, you can't.
We're just here to have a little fun.
There you go. And to all of our first responders and all of our great vets out there, without the vets, we wouldn't have the country that we have today. Hoorah!
Illegal alcohol. His daddy made the whiskey. Son, he drove low. When his engine roared, they called the highway Thunder Road. Sometimes into Asheville, sometimes Memphis town. The revenueers chased him, but they couldn't run him down.